Good evening, and welcome to the Yellow Dogs. We're lesson four, moving right along. So nice to sit with you tonight. Thank you for being part of the Sangha. Of course, I always do a little review at the beginning just to remind ourselves we've learned a lot. Taking one seat, what that means, posture, what's important about that posture, scanning the body. Randy did that, enabled that tonight in our guided meditation. Breath sensations. As our object of concentration, along with sensations themselves, and what to do with sounds, relax, observe, and allow. So tonight we'll see where thoughts fit into our practice. Now it's about thoughts. Now, Stephen, you can put that document up. And I'll send this out. But these are just things that, just to remind ourselves about thoughts, because, you know, they're just with us all the time. But the main thing, and this was certainly a switch for me, was you are not your thoughts. And thoughts are the thinker. Thoughts come and go. Noting, Randy mentioned noting. We can note when we're meditating, thinking. And of course, relax, observe, allow. And then add nothing to the thought. Now, of course, we're going to, but anytime we add anything to our thoughts, we're going to get in a story. And there's a time to do that, and a time not to add stories. So, thank you, Steve. Now I'd like to see the whole group.
Got to analyze on there. Don't
need to analyze. And that's another thing that, you know, we're really conditioned to do. Well, why did I think that thought, you know? Or why is that thought coming up all of a sudden? Or, you know, or shame on me for having that thought. But they're not you. We don't know from where they come, and we don't know where they go. So isn't it a relief? You know, it's somewhat of a relief to know. Now, I know we can create thoughts, but thoughts as we're sitting and looking at what's going on, they're just much ado about nothing. And the first time I sat down still with my eyes closed, I mean, holy moly, so many things were going on that it was just too overwhelming. I had no inkling of what was going on inside my mind and body. And so that's why we get quiet and still, because then clarity arises. Well, to sustain that clarity, that's what we're talking about, what to do with all these things that come up within us, not only in our meditation, but all through our life. Well, I found myself, I was at Jemez Spring a long time ago, found myself so overwhelmed, I started entertaining myself. I started almost like a stand-up comedian. Jemez
Springs Bodhi Mandala.
Yes, and it was like, you know, I was entertaining myself because what do you do when, you know, you can't do it? And everyone else, of course, was doing it. But it's just so overwhelming. I mean, if you're fairly new to the practice, don't get discouraged with that, because of the fact that that's the nature of the mind. Until we really get to know its nature, then it takes a while for it to settle down. It's not going to be, it wants to be in control all the time. And it's practiced a whole lot in our life, being in control. So it's not going to be controlled easily. So let's just listen to what some of our teachers say about thoughts. And Sharon Salzberg says, the mind thinks thoughts that we don't plan. It's not as if we say, okay, at 9:10, I'm going to be filled with self-hatred. And then Jack Kornfield says, you can't stop the waves, but you can learn to surf. And that's what we're trying, that's what we're practicing. And then I thought Byron Katie said something. Yeah, Byron Katie.
But, earlier.
Oh, this is it. She says, a thought is harmless unless we believe it. It's not our thoughts, but our attachment to our thoughts that causes our suffering. Attaching to a thought means believing that it's true without inquiring. A belief is a thought that we've been attaching to often for years. And that was Byron Katie. And then Eckhart Tolle says, no, it's Rodney Smith says, the cause of our suffering is not what we do, but the way we perceive. So these are things for which we're looking for. And thoughts are often one-sided and untrue. We are beginning to create a whole different relationship with the thinking mind. And it's not our enemy, because in its true natural state, it's luminous, is the mind, but it's been covered with all the other things in our life that keep us from being in the present moment, in the here and now. So it's learning to be mindful of thought instead of being lost in it. And we all are going to be lost in thought, and that's okay. That's just part of having a mind and a body. But Buddha himself says, who is your enemy? Mind is your enemy. Who is your friend? Mind is your friend. Learn the ways of the mind. Tend the mind with care. And I know I've said this before because I've heard it many, many times. It's where we have a choice, but it's where we enable most of our suffering that we're in charge of. Not the suffering of the world that comes to us, but what we create as a result of not understanding the nature of the mind causes the suffering. So Ajahn Buddhadasa says, how does the modern world look to a meditation master? Lost in thought. lost in thought. So the point of mindfulness is we don't want to get rid of thought, but we just want to begin to acknowledge it, not to be lost with it. So the Buddhist training teaches us, trains how to train this monkey mind. And to look clearly at what actually is going on, because we need to plan and think and organize and imagine and create. So the mind's important to us. And so we can consider our thoughts as a gift, and they set our direction sometimes and bring us understanding. It analyzes, it discerns, puts us in tune with the life around us. So we know, you know, thoughts are helpful. But as I said last week, it's a great servant, but the heart is the master. And so we begin to touch the heart on a sustained level where we begin to learn how to perceive through the heart instead of doing what the mind tells us to do. So when we rest in the heart, then we can use thought wisely. We can plan and imagine in benevolent ways. And so body awareness keeps us in touch with this wisdom, and we begin to make a distinction, living our lives through the whole body that includes the heart, instead of just relying on the mind and enabling it to, I mean, my mind loves to tell me what to do, but it's so nice for me to pause and say, I'm not going to do that. You can't make me. But we have to have a relationship with the mind where we know it. We know its nature and know when to trust it and when to just let it be. We don't want to push it away. Now, when we're sitting and we're quiet and we're still and thoughts come up, again, we let a thought arise and we let it fall away. Now, in the practice, we have the choice of, do we want to follow that thought? Do we want to add more thoughts? Well, the practice says, no, let that thought run its course and then come back to the breath. And of course, that takes practice, 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 practice. So thoughts are one-sided and mostly untrue. And so gradually we begin to see for ourselves experientially, we can't rely on it. We can use it, but we do not want to use it as the guide of our lives. So Buddhist psychology helps us to work with thoughts in important ways. First, it teaches us just how to notice the content of thoughts. Second, we learn the ability to disentangle from them. Well, if we can remind ourselves that we're not those thoughts, if we can remind ourselves that thoughts are just phenomena like sensations and emotions that arise and fall out, see how our perception changes, how we relate to the mind in a whole different way. So we learn to be mindful of thoughts instead of being lost in them. And it's such a relief, and I know you have felt that. So Buddhist psychology directs us to investigate both the content of those thoughts and the process of thinking itself. Now, we don't want to analyze, but when the thought comes up, we need to know it. We need to know what the thought is. But noticing that the mind rises, I mean thoughts rise, and they go away. Just that process itself, it will do wonders. Just that part of relating to thoughts in a different way. Don Juan, a Yaqui Indian who explained to his disciple Carlos Castaneda, says, "You talk to yourself too much. You're not unique in that. Every one of us does. We maintained our world with our inner dialogue. A man or a woman of knowledge is aware that the world will change completely as soon as we stop talking to ourselves." And if we're not talking to ourselves, what's our option? Being in the present moment, whole body awareness. Because if we're talking to ourselves, we're going to the mind, and the mind's going to take us from the present moment. So we want to look first at those thoughts that keep coming up, the same old, same old. I think Jack calls them the top 10 tunes. What are these thoughts that just have been with us forever? And to name them. And they're repeated thoughts. And, you know, who knows? They're probably about money, conflict, being anxious, planning. The oldie moldies. So the judging mind is another common tune. So representing all the critical, disappointed voices that have been with us since childhood, some of them. And so when the judging mind appears, we can simply just notice it. I keep saying how simple it is, but it takes practice, of course. It's a great relief to discover that our stories do not fully define who we are or what is happening to us. I make up stories all the time. I mean, I didn't even realize how much I made up stories because I would see, going down the street, I'd see a deer, you know, with another deer, and, you know, they'd be crossing the road, and all of a sudden, I had them as mother and, you know, baby and, you know, just finishing a sentence, you know, and it's just two deer, you know, crossing the road. There's not any more or less than that. But then I feel like I have to finish the story. And that's what the mind does. The mind needs to have a completeness to it. It needs to say, okay, that's it. Check it off. The end. And so we begin to see that for ourselves. But with mindfulness, we can step out of the story we're telling and just notice us telling the story. Think about that. Just noticing. Now, how could a practice be so simple? Because Buddha psychology is saying that once you recognize and you allow sometimes that's just enough. And you think, well, how can that be? Well, you have to find that out for yourself, because you one experiences it by practicing it. And then we see for ourselves how simple it can be. So we're just witnessing. We're all of a sudden witnessing, instead of feeling like we're connected to everything we think, or connected to everything that is happening within our bodies. Because within our bodies, there's lots of things going on. With or without us, our sensations, you know, the thinking, feelings, emotions. And so we find a time where we start questioning all the things that we begin to see within ourselves when we're quiet and still. So questioning our thoughts is at the heart of the Buddhist practice. And it may take us that, you know. It just may take us the time that we just need to find out for ourselves. Okay, I have this thought. Sometimes I check it with Randy. I think, I'm kind of having this intuition about something. I'll tell him what it is, you know. He said, no. You're wrong. That's not it. So, you know, I try to test my mind sometimes, but it makes things up. Achan Cha says, you have so many views and opinions. What's good and bad, right and wrong, about how things should be. Oh, that takes a lot of energy. You cling to your views and suffer so much. They are only views. Our opinions and our views are not any more stable than our mind and our bodies, because they're in time. They will die with us. So, in knowing how to live with all the phenomena that we were given in a way where we don't identify or think that's who we are. Because if it's going to die, if I'm my mind and my body, it's not, you know, there's something that doesn't die. But we all know that the mind and the body dies, and so do the thoughts. So they're in time. They're in the time of being a human being, but we still need to know them, their true nature. Why? Because they'll take over. And we do have choices. We have choices with the thinking mind. We've got choices with emotions. So, but we cling to views sometimes even about this particular practice, and Randy and I have seen that, you know, throughout the years, and what it does, because it's only a process. It's never, well, this is what it is, because it's just always changing. But it becomes dogma if we grab a hold of this practice and say, okay, I got it. I know what to do. I know what's going on. No, because then it closes us to the possibilities. Then it automatically closes the whole system down when we don't open up to possibilities. So believing our own thoughts and opinions, try it. See what happens. So, how strongly we believe our perspective, there's always other points of view. And so we know we've been opinionated ourselves, and we've been around opinionated people too. And then we've been around people who are just kind of open to possibilities and have a dialogue where nothing's set in stone. Because truly, nothing is set in stone. Nothing is going to be here forever that we are perceiving through the mind. So most of our mental suffering comes from how tightly we hold our beliefs. That's what we're looking for which we are looking. What are the thoughts that I am carrying around with me without knowing? And they come up when we practice, and they'll come up during the day. And when there's the right effort, like we're doing tonight, when we set an intention that we want to know, what are we saying to ourselves? And we want to ask ourselves, is it true? Well, I've asked myself that enough where I can say experientially, I can't rely on my mind like I have in the past. It's useful, but it can't be the master of the mind in the body. So when we let thoughts come and go without clinging to them, we can use thoughts. We can use the thought, but we can rest in the whole body. So it's just part of the phenomena, all the other phenomena that's going within this whole system of life. And there's such an innocence, a purity to whole body awareness when you are just right here in the present moment with it all. The whole enchilada, you know, in present. So there is an innate wisdom. And that's where what we're after. We're after what is it we can know about ourselves that we haven't wanted to know. Some of it we don't want to know. Anan Tupten, who is a Tibetan monk, went into the monastery at 8 years old. He said, so he lives it, he embodies it. He says, self-reflection, that's it. That's what it's all about. Who are we? Self-reflection. And he said, yeah, and it includes our shadows, for sure, he said. This is just Sunday. We don't want to go there. It's too scary. And many of us need help in finding those shadows. But this is the part, this is the hard part, or maybe the difficult part of wanting to know ourselves. But it's so precious because it's not like it depresses us. It's like a freedom and a release. Because we're not using our energy to hide from ourselves. We're living as much within the truth as we possibly can. And that's what this practice does. We begin to see things come up within the subconscious. So we can rest in the whole body, and we become trusting and courageous, and our patience grows. And we do not have to think it all through, because life is unfolding around us. So why not be with it? be with the processes of life. That's much more fun. And within the stillness of meditation, we see the insubstantial nature of thought. But not just thought, we see the insubstantial nature of our emotions, of our thinking, of our sensations, all of it that's going on inside that we're not in touch with. We learn to observe how words and images arise and then they vanish. I'm just looking at my time. I'm way over my time. But I'm going to stop there. Let me just say this one last word. We learn to observe how words and images arise and then vanish, leaving no trace. Forever, and you find this out for yourself, for every thought, there is a bodily sensation. But we don't always notice. See if that's true. So with that, I'm going to stop, really and truly.